I believe that most organizations, especially on the sales side of things, the game has changed, right? It's changed a lot. The days of, you know, schmoozing at lunch and, you know, the 3-hour martini lunches, like that's not, you know, that's not selling anymore. Right. And so that change has happened from HR departments to sales to marketing. And I think we need to look differently at the talent that we're bringing up into these organizations and even the skill sets that they might possess or previous background that they have. A different perspective brings a lot to an organization. If you can bring someone in who is not just fitting the requirements tab on the job description, but the intangibles are also there. They're emotionally intelligent. They care about their fellow employees. They are constantly learning. They want to personally better themselves at every turn. You start to find people like that that you can bring into your organization. You can teach the skills all day long. You can't teach the intangibles of, are they a good person? Are they trustworthy? Are they kind? Do they have a high EQ, IQ? Those things ultimately lead to a better overall organization. And I would argue that's probably one of your better feeders, finding those individuals to work through the organization and bring up to that leadership position, that leadership role.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com. Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker, and I'm excited today. I have my podcast overlord with me. Tony Bangert, the new chief revenue officer for Town News. I joke a little, but you guys do let me do this awesome podcast that I get to talk to people about the news.
I love it, and I'll take that introduction all day long.
Well, since
I've been called worse things.
You get a jersey later that just says overlord on the back, and we'll see. Well, congratulations on your new post at Town News. Here's why the real reason I'm excited is while you do come in with news organization experience, you're not a lifer. You haven't done just news organizations your entire adult life, like mostly like myself and really probably every guest we've had since we started this podcast. So I think probably as well as bringing it to your organization, I think to the show, you can bring some different and better perspectives that we don't always give ourselves because most of us, this is all we've ever done.
Yeah, no, I managed to get out for a brief amount of time, and it was very, very formative.
Was it like The Godfather? Every time you think you're out, they just pull you back in.
Well, you know, it's yeah. I did two separate tours of duty at the Tribune, and in between there, left and helped build a couple of startups. So it was pretty humbling going from large news organization that everybody in your marketplace knows to. Working for a startup, employee number 6, and trying to make it up as you go along with nobody knowing that who you are or what you do.
Well, I'm curious. I did leave the industry for about 6-7 years ish. I never would be doing I wouldn't have done the things that I'm doing now if I hadn't have spent my time with that other organization. I'd spent like I said, a few minutes in commercial real estate.
Okay.
So I was hanging out with other entrepreneurs, right? And that gave me the courage to give a try on other things. But I'm curious, so you've spent time outside of news, you're back in it, and you are with an organization now that supports news organizations of all sizes and types. I mean, from people like me who are getting about 10,000, 12,000 page views a month to the giant. You guys just signed on Toronto, right?
So, yeah, that's right. Yep.
So big one. So I'm curious, what is your, I guess, what do you see as you come in? What's your perspective of, hey, we've got to do some things that maybe a little different, or what is your view of things as you jump back into the industry?
Great question. You know, the leaving part was hard, right? When you're in the industry, especially, you know, at an organization like the Chicago Tribune, where, you know, we're a tight-knit family. We worked together for a long time in a number of different capacities. We went to each other's weddings and funerals, and you know, they were actually family, and still keep in touch with a lot of those folks now, and still work with some over at Lee and at Town News. But you know, the perspective I think that going to a startup can give you is that, you know, oftentimes when we work in any corporate type setting, you know, we start to think alike, we start to talk alike, and we start to have the same points of view on things. And, you know, when you enter the startup world, it's, like I said, it's pretty humbling because you are not only figuring it out as you go, nobody's coming to your rescue. If you don't sell things, right, there's pretty big implications to that. So gaining that perspective and then coming back into this environment has been really welcoming. And I think part of it is that when you think about Town News, you know, we are a SaaS software company. We have been for 30 years, just I think a little bit before SaaS was a pretty popular acronym, right? So coming into an environment where I understand the tech and the news, both on the newspaper side of things, but also the broadcast side of things, are very familiar to me, that it's kind of a great foot in both kind of worlds. On the news side, I get to stay close to all that matters in local journalism and local news, but also then get to play in a pretty fun tech sandbox where we've got a great development team. We're rolling out new products all the time. So it's kind of the best of both worlds for me.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that would fit into my what I think is my fun wheelhouse as well, or sandbox, as you said. Yeah, sure. Get to stay in news, but still play with all the new toys that come out. I want to key on something you said, though, kind of in the beginning of that answer. And I don't mean this to sound doom and gloom, but because it's not. But what you said was, you know, you go into a startup and you realize, you know, the things you're doing, there's no one there to catch you, to save you. Yeah. And, you know, we're in a pretty good period of transition as a news organization, as we rethink all of our models, whether it's audience engagement, news delivery, sales, all of those things. We're changing because we have to. We tried not to for a long time. But I think it's also good to realize, hey, no one else is coming to save us. And now we've got to figure out. And I think, you know, that leads to that. We have to think like those startups that you were just talking about, where we've got to be willing to shift gears on the fly.
Yeah. No, and that's, you know, part of what, in fact, this morning had a great presentation to really kind of talk through what the next year of building out the team looks like. And you know, part of that, you know, startup world is everything needs to be, especially in the SaaS world, everything needs to be predictable, right? That's where your massive valuations and multipliers come from. And that comes from revenue predictability by way of process, by way of systems, and not being reactive, but proactive. And so, you know, implementing some of those similar go-to-market strategies, those similar processes can really help both news organizations as well as, you know, what we're doing at Town News, speed things up. And it also creates clearly defined accountabilities. When people know what they're supposed to be doing every day, when they're accountable for a very specific and known number of tasks, things just happen to get done. Handoffs happen to be smoother. More communication is opened up. And just positive things come from building a team and thinking about a team structure that way.
How do you think, and you know, like, you're not going to have the answer for everybody, but how do we adjust our line of thinking so that we can make those changes? Because I feel like a lot of times, and I'll go back to when, you know, when we all started getting websites,
for our newspapers, right?
Yeah. We planned and planned and planned and planned. And I mean, it took a year to launch a website, right? Yeah. You know, a 5 or 6 page website. It took a year to build that out and to get it just perfect.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we can't do that now. You can't plan too much because A, we've learned, we'll just keep the example of websites. We've learned websites are never done. They're never perfect. Yeah. And if you wait, you're never going to launch. But how do we kind of, I guess, how do we take that mindset into all of the other things
that
we're doing? And I guess you could talk about products because that's what you're delivering at Town News.
You know, I think, one of the mindset shifts and I think when you're looking at what an organization, a large media organization used to be as it relates to vendors they worked with or systems that they had to buy or printing presses, right? These were massive purchases that took a long time that had committees involved. And the reality is it is so cheap to automate now, now more than ever, right? There's SaaS software everywhere that can be integrated seamlessly into everything else and create an end-to-end process that actually drives predictable activity. But those decisions don't need to be big decisions, right? It's $50 a seat, a monthly license, right, to test and learn. And so I do think that, shifting that mindset to, failure isn't as expensive as it used to be is really, really important. The reality is a lot of our systems are just slow moving and those systems need refinement. Those in-house systems that maybe worked 30 years ago, they need to be changed. They need to be modernized. That allows you to speed things up as well as forecast more accurately where you're going and where your revenue is going.
What do you mean, I guess, when you say modernize our processes and we can, if you want, we can pick something specific and we can talk maybe sales. Everybody wants to know how to drive sales and drive revenue. But yes. I guess what are you really talking about when you say we need to modernize those processes?
So one of the things that I recognized when I made the move from a newspaper on the digital side over to a startup is the importance of the marketing function. The marketing teams that I had always historically worked with, they built decks. They scheduled trade shows. They did the occasional webinar, right? Well, in a startup world, especially in SaaS environments, the marketing function is where it all begins. That's the business development, the lead generation, creating automated outreach system that allow you to get individuals interested, pique their interest, educate them a bit before they raise their hand. And do that with some lightweight automation to continue nurturing prospects, warm or cold, through the purchase funnel. So that would be one example, is thinking about the marketing function a bit differently. What we've also built is really an end-to-end process that does two things. One, creates accountability at every level. Two, it increases your speed through funnel. But it also creates clearer handoffs. And what I mean by that is the business development function is gold on the number of leads generated that are qualified by the seller. So if the seller is qualifying that lead, that person that's teed up the lead is ultimately getting paid against that. Same thing along the line. So sales understands what their role is. And the reality is sales used to be a catch-all. You're doing proposals, you're doing outreach, you're schmoozing, you're going to sporting events, you're putting the proposal together, you're pitching it, you're closing it. Like, you can't be good at all those things. Those are very different skill sets. And so when you start to think about the end-to-end business development and sales function, business development people are doing their thing. They're list building, they're doing outreach, they're warming the waters, getting those prospects to raise their hands. You've got a sales team who understands their job is to close those deals, to bring those deals through the funnel, be that shepherd, and ultimately bring it to a close, and then hand off to that account manager for that seamless transition. So when you incentivize and you clearly create those accountabilities, those handoffs become smoother and everybody starts rowing in the same direction.
Is that mostly through changes personnel-wise, or is this using technology?
Technology, using sales automation systems. We actually just implemented Zoom Info, which is one part data repository where you can find just about any contact record that you can imagine. And then some lightweight sales automation that allows you and the business development person not to have every single step in that sales nurture process be a manual one. It reduces the amount of time it takes to get in front of those folks. And it also allows us, you know, a number of steps to do that. The reality is people require 10, 11, 12 touch points before they even raise their hand, if they're at all interested. So automating some of those steps to make sure that all of it isn't done by human intervention is really, really important.
Does that translate across those kind of changes that translate across, you know, industry, across business? I mean, is that things that, you know, you talked about, these are things you've done with your own office. Is that the kind of things that you are suggesting that, I guess, that people in their own organizations can do as well to kind of mimic?
Yeah. If you're looking to drive, lead predictability, those are systems that anybody can use. When I was at the Tribune the last go around, we did implement an outreach system that's still being used today, and a very similar one that we're building here. So those reps are still using it today, and a few of them are, I know. So that can be plugged in a number of different industries, et cetera.
I'm going to kind of go backward a little bit, because you talked about marketing. And one thing that, again, my perspective is probably skewed because this is all I've known.
Sure.
But one thing I think that we've always been bad at is the marketing of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Telling the story to our audience of the product that we produce. Yeah. Why we produce it, why it's important to them. How do we get better at telling that story about marketing the news products that we develop and sell? And let's be fair too. We're not just a news product anymore. We are business partners with so many people in the communities we serve, where they're marketing reps, their ad reps, just all of these partnerships that we've created to keep the revenue streams going and to make our communities better. How do we sell ourselves? How do we tell that story better?
It's ironic that we're in the business of promoting other businesses, right? And sometimes we're not as good at it for ourselves as we should be.
No, we do not toot our own horns well.
That's right. Yes. And, you know, I do think part of that, especially on both broadcast and the news newspaper side of things, we have, for the most part, 100% penetration in a marketplace, right? Name recognition, brand recognition. And so, you know, even when I was at the Tribune, everybody would take my call, right? You say that you're with the Chicago Tribune, you're calling someone in Chicago, they're going to take your call or give you a call back, right? In the startup world, especially early stage, I mean, nobody knows who you are, right? So they're not even taking your call just because they recognize the brand that you're calling from, right?
Right.
So end to end, it is just a game of building awareness perpetually. And it's done via LinkedIn, and it is applying for awards, and it is going to conferences, getting on stage, having that marketing function, use the C-suite, use the founders to get out into the marketplace, be at the trade shows, be on stage to tell our story. And the reality is we all have a transformation story to tell. Every newspaper has a transformation story to tell. I just think that making a concerted effort to actually figure out what that story is and how you're telling it is probably step number one, which we just don't do.
Well, and I think our transformation stories are different now than they were 25 years ago.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because now we're in your pocket 24 hours a day.
For sure. Yes. Yeah. And you know, in the past, we, like I said, we really didn't need to. There weren't all the channels available that were creating a lot of the noise. So, you know, in most given markets, 30 years ago, you were talking about 1, 2, maybe 3 newspapers on a daily basis. Couple of TV stations, your CBS, your NBC, your ABC, and your Fox, right? And that's it. And even 30 years ago, I don't think Fox was here yet. So it was very easy to maintain your recognition in the marketplace, whomever you were in the media space. And it's just not the case anymore.
Do you think that the larger organizations have to work harder now just to even keep that name recognition? I mean, there's been so much national narrative pushback against news orgs that is anybody really taking the Tribune's call, or you know, the Daily Mail or whatever, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a, I will say it's a difficult, while the transformation story is real, it's, I think, a bit of a difficult one to tell, right? What does the general public necessarily care about the products that you're creating? And then if you go to the opposite end of the spectrum, which is we exist to save democracy, that isn't really something that resonates per se with a modern consumer that's getting inundated with messaging all day long on every device. So it's crafting that story that's somewhere in between, right? The importance of the local news, the importance of what they bring to the community, but also the way that they do it, which that's where the perception might be a bit lost. My daughter, who's 14, doesn't read a newspaper, doesn't go to the Chicago Tribune. I mean, that's just a reality. She gets most of her news from YouTube. So she doesn't even know that the Chicago Tribune is necessarily a sales share, a channel that she could get information from, right? So it's important to, on another layer, but tapping into the younger audiences is going to be the next challenge that's in front of us. And if we're just focused on solving today's problems, I will never be able to solve the future problems, which that one's real and it's coming fast.
Yeah. And I brought that up because I wondered if it was in some ways a little bit easier for the smaller startups, because there are so many like myself that just, you know, decided, hey, there's a hole, there's a void in the community, let's fill it. Whether that's, you know, news through digital, you know, still written, whether it's video using all of our social media and video channels now, that it's almost easier to tell that startup story. Like, hey, we're here, this new thing, but it's easy and honestly cheap for me to hit all of, like, you know, right? If my kid's 15. So if our kids are, if our kids are the audience and then that generation, it's pretty cheap for me to hit all of the things that they're hitting.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not cheap to be, we keep using the Tribune, and I don't want to make them mad. We keep using that, but I mean, it's not cheap to be the you know, one of the four news stations in your big market, or you know, the Metro Daily newspaper. Is it almost harder for the big legacy news orgs to do that?
You know, it's you're balancing the you know, decline or constriction of a business, right? That's challenge number one. Then you're struggling also to kind of tell that right story in the marketplace. And then on top of it, with a certain generation, you might not be viewed as the sexiest place to visit, right? So I would agree with you. I think sometimes it can be easier to build that business from the ground up versus, you know, ultimately change an unbelievably difficult business to navigate at this moment in time.
How do we, I guess I'm curious, the kind of approach isn't the right word, but there, you do have to change, kind of playing off what we were just talking about. Like, it's pretty easy for me to rally support or readership to get, hey, this is a grassroots effort, right?
Right.
How can the some of the bigger olders change that mindset and grasp hold of that? Because I think if you look, everyone is trying to preach the importance of local, that we're the place you can go to know what's happening in your backyard.
Yep. You know, I think one of the misses that I've seen, and I don't think this is exclusive to just the media business, I think it's many corporate environments. You have individuals in your building that don't consume your products because of whatever reason. And those are individuals that should be tapped into, right? Understand what is it that, and empower them, right? Empower them. I've seen so many, I was at a dinner at a conference not long ago, and you know, there was a woman at the table who was much younger than all the other, you know, men that were at the table. And she didn't chime in on a lot of topics that we were talking about. And I brought her into the conversation at one point, and she had a strong point of view on what we were talking about. But sometimes, you know, and I would think of my daughter who's 15, you know, she might not raise her voice in a room full of or at a dinner party with a lot of people that, you know, might be her elders. Right.
Right. Yeah. So, I feel like that's a thing we're all trying to do better is empower our employees, our colleagues.
Yes.
To be stronger ambassadors, to take not just ambassadors for our products, right, but to take part in those conversations that when you have a seat at the table,
that's right,
you can feel free to speak up. And we won't go into all of the cultural conversations that will send us for the next 6 hours and not solve anything. But I think, you know, that's a thing we're all trying to figure out too, is how can we get everyone on our teams from CEO down to feel like they have ownership in the business and the product. And again, I think that's goes back to what you started with. That's thinking like a startup.
Yeah. You know, first and foremost, leaders empowering those individuals are just, that's mission critical, right? I might possess more expertise simply because I've been doing this thing longer. That doesn't make your input into this conversation null and void, right? And I should be transferring my knowledge to them, just as they should be transferring their knowledge to me. So engaging in the conversation is important. Having teams understand that they have a voice, making sure that they don't feel like if they say something might be challenged by management, right? They feel empowered to openly communicate within the organization. You get that right, and now there's knowledge transfer happening. There's trust that's been built, and that's how, and, you know, you think of a startup, right? You don't remember your best days at work. If you look back 20 years ago, you look back at that moment where you and your team had to solve a really hairy problem that you had to figure out, and you were there till midnight doing it. That's the stuff that you remember, right? You don't remember necessarily just the good days. So that teamwork that you see at a startup is built on the fact that you're in it together. It's really hard. What you're doing is oftentimes scary. That builds trust fast. And when that trust exists, teams start to go in the same direction. And a lot of times within our larger organizations, and again, not just media, there's walls. And there's walls that exist where friction is caused by, you know, actually people not being nice to each other or not communicating well. And that can't happen in a startup because you need to be moving way too fast for there to be disagreement or friction at every turn.
We didn't plan on talking about leadership, but this is a great topic. You know, and I credit my ability to you know, I was able to move up and advance and do things and even get to where I am now, where I have a couple of businesses. I credit that to a publisher I had 20 some years ago, who, when I was just a sports guy,
yeah,
right, covering high school sports and, you know, writing features, who invited me in, who made he invited everyone. I feel like I was one of the ones who took advantage of that, but, you know, he invited everybody in and said, here's how everything works together. Here's how what you're doing on the editorial side affects the bottom line, and how the advertising, which we could go for a couple hours on how the brick wall between news and ads now needs to be gone, not just thin, it needs to be gone.
Yep.
But then it goes back to even what you were just talking about, inviting people in and perspective. We talked about perspective at the very beginning of this, that, you know, we need the perspective of the young female that's never sat at the table with all the old white guys that have run news organizations forever, right?
Right.
We need to make her feel comfortable to speak up and to join in that conversation, because we've all had the same perspective for 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it's not easy, I think, for, you know, a lot of organizations to do. But I think what you said is important, which is if everybody understands what each piece of the machine does, it creates an understanding of what you're doing end to end. Take someone who's 25 years old that's working at a publishing company on the digital side of things. Take them over to the printing press and show them how those papers get to market. It's a logistics, I mean, balancing act. It's mind-bendingly cool, right? But they have a perception, perhaps, that I don't want to, you know, I'm on the digital side. I'm not on the newspaper
right.
side, right? So understanding end-to-end of how the product goes to market, how the teams work together to make that happen is critical. And so I think, you know, to your point earlier, just engaging in those conversations, lowering the walls or bringing them down entirely, that's the only way that an organization grows exponentially, is when a team is rowing in the same direction and process is allowing us to do it.
Well, and I think that I will just say, for me, that was the thing that let me feel ownership of that newspaper.
Sure.
I saw where my little piece fit in that wheel, right?
Yep.
And so then I could say, okay, now I feel like I've got a piece of everything, and what I do is important.
And whatever we do as humans, we are going to feel as important, top to the bottom of the organization. If you're doing it, it's important. And so when you, to your point, understand where you fit in and what your accountabilities are and what you're accountable for, you're right. You feel part of the entire process end to end.
I asked you a lot of how questions earlier that were more about sales and processes. So yeah. Now I'm going to put you on the spot.
All right.
Totally unprepared question here.
All right, go.
We're at a point in our transformation stories where we're searching for the next leaders.
Yeah.
The people that can do these things that we're talking about. How do we not only search for them, but open the doors so that we're even a chance of them finding us and finding these openings? How do we do that and be better at finding those next leaders that can come from virtually anywhere?
Yeah. That's a great question. In fact, you know, I believe that most organizations, especially on the sales side of things, the game has changed, right? It's changed a lot. The days of, you know, schmoozing at lunch and, you know, the 3-hour martini lunches, like that's not selling anymore. Right. And so that change has happened from HR departments to sales to marketing. And I think we need to look differently at the talent that we're bringing up into these organizations and even the skill sets that they might possess or previous background that they have. A different perspective brings a lot to an organization. If you can bring someone in who is not just fitting the requirements tab on the job description, but the intangibles are also there. They're emotionally intelligent. They care about their fellow employees. They are constantly learning. They want to personally better themselves at every turn. You start to find people like that that you can bring into your organization. You can teach the skills all day long. You can't teach the intangibles of, are they a good person? Are they trustworthy? Are they kind? Do they have a high EQ, IQ? Those things ultimately lead to a better overall organization. And I would argue that's probably one of your better feeders, finding those individuals to work through the organization and bring up to that leadership position, that leadership role.
I had another boss one time who told me they were looking for a manager position. And, you know, we had spread out, right, all of the applications, the cover letters and stuff. And what he told me was, I'm looking for the one that's bad at taking credit for things.
Like it. That's great.
And I just thought that's an interesting lesson. And good, because, you know, we all say, don't be the smartest person in the room, be the one that has all the smartest people in the room.
Without question. Yes. Yep.
Well, let me tell you, or ask you, I guess, how has it been transitioning into this? You've been here for, you've been at Town News for 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, it's been exactly like 90 days, I think, is the total. But we've gotten a lot done in a short amount of time, which is exciting.
Are you just kind of personally, I'm curious, are you a hit that ground running, kind of jump in and get going person?
Yes. I think my team would argue perhaps maybe too much. my wife, before I started this position, said, you know, just don't go in too hot, you know, like, you know, just go in a little slow. And so I did for about, I think, Monday and Tuesday of my first week, I kind of slowed down and took it all in, and then hit the ground running. The reality is, you know, I like moving fast. I think it's a trait that I possess, and it's one that I think helped in my startup days. But I have been trying to teach myself as well to, you know, take all of the information in, take all the inputs in, make sure that you're making the right decisions, because I've seen too often individuals come into an organization and blow something up and start it all over with no real understanding of was it right in the first place, or did the team, that player that perhaps you didn't receive the best information on before you started the role, do they have a chance to actually turn this around? Is it a function of them not having been really led in the past? And so, yes, I'm a hit the ground running kind of person, but trying to do it as thoughtfully as I can while impacting change as quickly as I can.
I can understand that attitude. About a year ago, I was asked to serve on a board for a local organization, and you know, we need those partners in our lives that tell us those things, right? And yes, my wife did something similar where she just said, "Be 60% you."
I'm going to tell my wife that. That's a good one.
First month or so, be 60% you. And you know what? She's right.
Yes. Yes.
As she usually is.
We become wiser with time, and I'm trying to learn from past lessons to leverage both speed as well as thoughtful speed.
How do you think you are different as a leader now than maybe say you were, you know, before you joined the startup? When, like, let's go back to your last tour there. You said you did a couple tours with Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, how has your leadership styles changed? Or is it a style change?
I think it is. I would say one of the things that just, I think it was a very pivotal moment in my career, both personally and professionally. The first startup that I helped build in Minneapolis, we ended up pivoting into a health and well-being organization that was teaching really beautiful, beautifully produced courses on things like mindfulness, meditation, understanding brain chemistry, right? From like best in class TED Talk speakers, neuroscientists, right? And that was my first kind of aha moment of like, and you'd go to these conferences and they're well-being conferences and Deepak Chopra's up on stage, right? Or that kind of stuff. So it was it got me into a world by way of startup pivot that affected me, that I took personally. I started to become more mindful, understanding how brain chemistry impacts team growth, how it impacts relationships, and what are the triggers that cause that to happen. So that for me was a really important moment that changed me personally and professionally, and I think I'm bringing a lot of that now to my leadership style than I had in the past. I think my team today would probably say, talk a little bit differently about me as a leader than the leader of 20 years ago that I brought to the table. Not in a negative way, just different.
Right. Well, you know, I as we kind of wrap up here, we won't take everyone's time too much for this episode, but yeah. I'm going to do something I haven't done on this podcast before.
Okay.
I'm curious with the way we've gone here at the end of this conversation. Yeah. Who are some leadership, who are examples of good leaders that maybe we can throw out for other people and as we're doing this, or maybe a couple books?
I won't point to any specific leaders by name, but I would say I've worked with really great leaders in my career, and I've worked with really not so great.
We'll name them, right?
Correct. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Just start rattling them off, right? But I will say that I've learned the same from both. In one capacity, what to do when leading, in another capacity, being aware enough to understand how to learn from how bad their leadership was, what not to do, right? So I've been fortunate to have both, but you know, the probably a little bit you know, mainstream, but I just, Simon Sinek, just, it connects with me. His book, The Infinite Game, How We Think About Business, is fascinating to me. Starting with Why, his first book, very interesting, and that ties, I think, why it resonates with me, is much of what he speaks of is tied to brain chemistry and how it affects you as a leader. Using examples from, you know, military type of organizations and structure, really impactful leadership lessons for me from a lot of those books.
I feel like this is the longest we've ever talked. We had one other conversation for about 15 minutes a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
But I get the feeling that you have an interesting in your style and your personality kind of dichotomy, because it sounds like you're pretty, you know, you're pretty freewheeling and you're ready to shift gears quickly if you need to, but yep. You also seem very much into process and structure.
It's weird. It's weird. In fact, I'm working right now. I'm talking with someone who we're potentially looking to bring on board. And she said that same thing to me. She's like, a salesperson that gets process? Like, that's, what is that, right? That is the, that's the startup in me, right? Again, if you don't have that process, in fact, one of the first startup, the Big No in Minneapolis that I helped build, we had an operating system, a gentleman by the name of Gino Wickman, a book called Traction. And it's an operating system for startups, and it is a very formulaic process by which leadership plots where the organization is going a year out, 3 years, 5 years, 20 years out, and then you've got different milestones that are in shorter time frames, year, quarter, week, and you now start to use that process to identify what are the important things that need to get done on all of our desks, whether that's sales or marketing or development. And when you create that type of a process, you really start to open your eyes to how powerful that can be and how much it can just speed up an organization. So that lesson for me, I don't think would have come, like it wouldn't have come had I not left and experienced that startup building.
Well, now we're bringing this full circle. Do you think that's maybe the biggest change in what our sales used to be and how we have to do it now, is that we have to, especially with technology, I guess that we're bringing in all these technology pieces, that yep. We have to have a process. We have to have a system that yep. Can be repeated.
Yes, I do believe that. And, you know, I am sure there'll be people that disagree. You know, there's always going to be the psychological, the personal element to the sale. I mean, you can't take that away. People buy from people. That's always going to be the case. I just think that having more rigor around how we hold each other accountable at every stage is what's important. If we're not communicating what our real pipeline is, it doesn't benefit the organization. So if we're being transparent and we all have insights into that pipeline, all of a sudden we're accountable for that pipeline. And I've learned that in many traditional organizations, there just isn't that transparency. My number is my number. Nobody knows what my number is. That doesn't have to be the case. We're all aiming at one specific number, and our individual numbers are predicated on our ability to grow and get us to that number as an organization. So bringing process transparency into the sales world and into the business world in general, I think is mission critical as we think about where we're going in the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Again, I think that's that leadership thing we're talking about, where we open it up for everybody to see their role, the other person's role. So it's not just about me. I can see how me and the three, four other people, 20 people around me, how we all have to fit together. And we make this thing together.
And the reality is many organizations have bonus structures where an individual person gets bonus based off of company performance. Well, if that person doesn't understand how they impacted the end game of that big number that we are all aiming at, it really isn't, it doesn't do anything. It just gets them a check that you're cutting at the end of the year.
Right. And checks are nice, but we get more checks when we understand why.
Correct. That's exactly understanding your why.
There we go. I'm gonna ask one last question. We're gonna wrap it up with this, and because I'm really curious here. Yeah. One piece of advice, whether it's, you know, you have a protege in mind, or you know, anyone who's coming into a leadership role or current leader, a piece of advice as we look forward, we continue to build our organizations. Do you have one good piece of leadership advice?
Be patient, be kind, be thoughtful.
There we go. Tony, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I appreciate what you're doing with Town News, and that you continue to let me just talk to people around the country. I enjoy that.
Really, really appreciate the time. And this was a lot of fun, and not a bad way to end the week either.
Not a bad way to close out our Friday. I appreciate it. That will wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time.
Take care. Bye-bye.